Welcome to Postel's Podcast, where you can learn from our experienced guests and gain new insight on how real estate, your personal security, and living the outdoor lifestyle can strengthen your inner core and bring out the power you need for life. And now here's your host, Mike Postel.
I have two unreal bros. They're actually brothers on today, Postel's Podcast. Thank you for everyone tuning in. I've been trying to get these guys on for a minute, and I'm excited to have them finally get on. Super busy guys. So let's get right into it. I have Mick and Chance, or Chance and Mick Barber, the Barber Brothers, originally from Manhattan Beach, California. These guys were insane ripper surfer guys when they were kids, carried on through their later years, and they've kind of gone a little bit in different directions, but they're both outstanding individuals who are very productive in their own right. So we're going to touch upon the outdoor lifestyle. That's part of this segment for Postel's Podcast. We'll get right into it. So Mick and Chance.
Thanks for having us, Mike.
You're welcome. Thanks, Chance. So it's hard to get you two guys together, I guess, regardless, because Chance, you're based out of Chicago, right? You're in Illinois, a suburb of Chicago, I take it?
Yeah, about 45 minutes.
Okay. And Mick, you're in San Diego County, correct? We won't name the town.
Yeah, the house is in San Diego, but spend a lot of time on plane. Unlike my pilot brother, it's more for work, where I sit in the back where he's in the front.
Nice. So Chance is this unreal pilot for Southwest Airlines. He flies the 737, right, Chance? Boeing 737. And so Mick told me a long time ago, you were the youngest guy to get hired as a pilot. Is that correct?
At the time I got hired, I was the youngest. There were younger people prior to me. Mm-hmm. But the airline stuff, everything is based on when you're hired and seniority. So being hired very young is good, because by the time I retire at 65, I will be the most senior pilot.
Wow. Awesome.
But Chance, cool. Also, didn't you get your 737 type rating before you were allowed to get your type rating?
Yeah, you have to be 23 to get it, but you can take the test, I believe, at 21. And you get a letter from the FAA that says on your 23rd birthday, you get the license. And that's how I did it. Yeah.
Oh, killer. So you got it, though, before 23, obviously. What Mick's saying, right? Yeah.
But I couldn't use it until I turned 23.
Roger. Got it. Very cool. And so Chance is this awesome pilot for Southwest Airlines, travels all over, and we'll get into that. And Mick is, both you guys are super smart. So when I sit, going on to Mick's brain, it's nothing against Chance, because we know you're super smart too. So Mick is this very smart business guy who got his MBA up in what, San Francisco, was it? Years ago?
Yeah, my diploma says USF.
Very cool. Awesome. And so now you're the big shot of a particular company.
I'm the managing director.
Yeah, my bad.
Yeah. The company that I work for, we basically create the physical layer for technology systems. So there's days that I'm wearing a hard hat and boots in a 28-story high rise, because we're doing the cabling for all the data systems, or the complex security systems, or the digital distributed antenna systems, or the audio visual systems for big social media firms, Fortune 500 firms, throughout Canada and the United States. We do everything from the design of the systems to the installation of the systems, which runs hand in hand with the big construction general contractors.
Nice. Were you guys born and raised in Manhattan Beach? Like, I mean, you're raised, but were you born in Manhattan Beach or the South Bay area, or?
Dover Air Force Base.
Okay. Cause your dad,
Air Force Recon Chopper, 40th Aero Recovery and Rescue.
God bless him. Thank you.
Chance is a native Californian, though, so he's always got that over me.
Yeah, I was born in Canoga Park. We lived in Redondo growing up till about my fourth grade, which however old you are then, nine-ish. And then we lived in Manhattan Beach the rest of the time.
Okay, cool.
Before that, though, you lived in Brentwood, Santa Monica, Venice.
So when did you guys get that bug where, like, surfing just, it grew on you, just entrenched in you, and you're like, I got to do this. I want to do this every day. I want to compete, blah, blah, blah. How old were you guys?
I think I started boogie boarding when Chance and I were in Redondo. I was probably in, sixth grade. And then we started catching so much flack at Manhattan Pier for being a boogie boarder that flipped to the surfboard when I was 14. Chance, you went to sixth grade in Manhattan Beach, right? Or fifth grade?
Fourth grade on.
At Pacific? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So our father, who we didn't live in the same house with, he moved us to a property in Manhattan Beach with our mom. And then we were four blocks from the beach. So it was pretty much on from then on. And that was where, you know, where our compasses pointed every day. There was no question what was happening before or after school. It was in the water.
Wow. Because Mick, the way you rip and surf, I thought you were surfing like even before 14. So that says a lot. I mean, you, for those listening, Mick is this rip dad, competed a lot, did the whole, what, NSSA, and you did the all the college stuff and when you went to college, right? Yeah. Some, did you get semi-pro?
Some PSAAs too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I surfed the PSAAs. Yeah. So for 1 year and then went and got my master's degree and put hung up the spurs.
But then you'd surf when you could and then go out and just throw bucks.
Yeah, I just got out of the water about it. Yeah, an hour ago. So,
oh, nice, awesome. Hey, that's killer. You're still keeping the stoke, keeps you motivated. You know, keeps you alive. So, Chance, were you kind of we're obviously Big Bro's doing his thing. Was it kind of just a natural progression? Where I mean, because everyone's different family wise. I got three boys; they're all different. Did you just? I want to be like my Big Bro. I want to beat my Big Bro. What was it with you?
Yeah, it started that way, and I think I had the hindsight of him starting before me, because then I jumped pretty quick. I think I'd say from the time I was 12 in the boys division till about 18. I mean, WSA, NSSA, I did three U.S. championships. I surfed the first OP Pro Junior that they had. I got to.
Oh, nice.
I never did very well in any of those, but some of the California stuff and the regional stuff I did well. And then
you surfed the wave pool too, the PSA, right?
Right. And then around 18, I realized I was probably not good enough to make a living. And that's when I started flying, and then I just pivoted hard toward that.
Oh, smart. So you followed in your dad's direction.
Right.
Very.
I think the big thing, too, for both of us when we were younger, I mean, Mick played baseball, but I wasn't very good at, I guess I would say, traditional sports. So I took to surfing, and the fact that the harder I worked, the better I did, and I didn't really have to rely on anyone else.
Yeah. The cool thing, Mike, was when Chance was, well, it's funny, is when, like, flashback to when, if I was 14, or I was 15, and Chance was 11, he started creating such his own brand as Small Fry, and he had totally different sponsors and totally like was surfing against Machado and ultimately Slater and the, you know, in a younger group, but he achieved so much success so quickly that I actually tried to distance myself from him in the competitiveness.
Really?
Like one time Matt Warshaw wrote an article where he talked about the Barber brothers, and I was so mad that it wasn't Mick and or Chance. It was the Barber brothers.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, and you just brought up an interesting thing. Maybe I just hit a nerve with you guys in a positive way, but you know, maybe I should have interviewed you guys individually, but I never had a brother. I always wanted a brother. No disrespect to you, Dee Dee, my sister, but I always wanted a brother. And so I always looked up to guys like you, that brother relationship thing, because I just thought that was so cool. I always wanted to like have a bro where I could bounce away from my dad and go ski and burn turns, or I could go out in the water, or I could go fish, or, you know, do whatever. But I was always by myself. And so I really had to, like, if I wanted it, and Chance, you touched upon this, I had to go out and get it. Not that you didn't either, Mick, but I'm just what Chance said earlier. I had to go out and get it, find it, and work hard at it, because I was behind the eight ball. You know, I started later than you guys surfing, and that's an interesting take. So that you said, Mick, that's classic.
Well, it's interesting. Chance and I were raised by a single mom. You know, our dad was very, very supportive and awesome. He was an international pilot, though, for Flying Tigers, then FedEx. So, you know, raised by our mom, you know, who was a Raiderette cheerleader and a paralegal. And we were so independent. So, you know, it's get home from high school, throw the backpack down, grab the board and go. And that's kind of how, I don't know, Chance, right? About all high school was, you know, maybe a football dance here and there, but there's a contest every weekend. So it's, you know, getting in the back of a truck with one of the older guys and driving to Santa Cruz or Ventura or San Diego or something like that.
Yeah. In some ways it was very positive because it forced us to be independent and focused. But in some ways we, at least I think about it as I'm older now, we had to grow up a little faster. Competition stuff was important to us. So yeah, where your friends were going to go out and party or whatever. No, I have to get up at 4 a.m. and drive to San Diego and surf all day, you know, and hope that I do well enough to then go back and do it again on the Sunday. So, I mean, I think built who we are by that drive. Mm-hmm. Like you missed out on stuff of being a kid, but I think the independence and the drive from it outweighed some of that stuff.
That's insane.
It's like if I could go back,
go ahead.
Sorry, no. If I could go back and do it again, I would throttle back hard on the competitiveness and spend more time on the I have a brotherness, because we were both kind of doing our own things in the same world. And even though we went to a ton of contests together and competed in the same contest, we were in different age groups. We had different sponsors, but we had the same group of friends. It was that tribe of human beings, whether it was NSSA, WSA, CSA, et cetera, where you'd see the guys from LA, you'd see the guys from Ventura, the guys from San Clemente Mafia, Huntington, Noops, you know, there was just, you'd see the same crews every weekend. And so you're almost closer to them than you were the people you went to school with.
Absolutely.
Because they could be working hard all week to improve and be focused to come there and do the best they could. Like, although we're all doing it in different places, we all have the same goal. Mm-hmm. Where people at school, like Monday, you'd wear your NSSA t-shirt because they gave you a different contest shirt.
And remember that?
Yeah, every contest shirt. It was one design every year of whoever won the previous year. But every week it was a different color. But if you did well, you wore your shirt to school on Monday. But most people at school like had no idea what it was, or
a
very faint idea of it.
Yeah. Mike, one year, the victor of the Open Men's NSA, a photo of them was the icon for the whole next season on every shirt. It was Wells one year. Chris Wells.
Shut up. Wellsy, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Right.
Yeah. So Wells had 700 people every weekend, you know, for what, 15 events, wearing him on his back, on their backs.
Oh my God. Aloha, Wells, because I know you're listening. Oh, that's epic.
Yeah.
Bash with the arms and the whole bit.
Yeah, with the arm. Yeah.
That's
so
awesome.
Classic.
Oh, I can see. Oh, my God. That's funny. I can just see. Yeah, bro. You know, that's me on the shirt. No, oh, I can totally hear Wells. That's awesome.
Yeah. He was actually pretty humble about it, but that guy was a legend, you know, from our, you know, Chance is kind of the next youth below that generation. You've got the Ty Sukers, Brian Bradfields, Wells. Wells was always kind of the most successful competitor for, you know, below the Frohoff, Ted, Kelly,
right.
Steve Machen, Todd Jacobs, yep. And those guys. It was, yeah, Wells was kind of the most successful guy of our group always. You know, he went on to the CT, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah. Chance, you brought up a really important thing that people need to listen to. So if you got some young kids, if you're parents and you got some young kids out there that are down for surfing and they're competing, or maybe you're just a young kid listening to this and you're looking for direction, these two guys are solid individuals to listen to. So Chance, you brought up how by default, you guys had to learn off the fly and you matured and grew up faster than, say, kids your age. So you had a more mature factor, I guess, if you will, more experience, life skills, if you will, than all the kids your age, which says a lot, because in my opinion, that's putting you ahead of all the kids your age and some a little higher, some a little younger. And you're just that much further along the curve where you can open up your eyes more and got exposed to so much at a young age. You could sit back, like when I teach, you know, when I go through situational awareness, I'm doing executive protection. Don't just charge out the door. Open that door, breathe, relax, and look around your first 10 feet, and then start projecting further out yards wise and look around before you bum rush outside. And you better have a plan or two for your, you know, your course or your detail as well. So you definitely resonated. That resonated with me, Chance, when you said that. And I know, Mick, you're on the same page. But
yeah, Mike, to add to what you're saying real quick, sorry to interrupt
no,
you,
but go ahead.
Chance, when he was in first grade, had a quick set key around his neck with a shoelace. That was the key to our front door in an apartment in Playa del Rey before we moved to Redondo. We went to Paseo del Rey Fundamental Elementary Magnet School on West 91st Street.
Yeah.
And so Chance had, he literally is actually a latchkey kid. If I wasn't walking him home, he navigated his way home in first grade, got home, and, you know, we would make a sandwich and go play. But yeah, he's situational awareness kind of came with the territory, especially with him as young as he was.
Right. Oh my God. What a cute little kid with a key around your neck. Oh my God, Chance. You must have been such a cute little kid. Oh my gosh. That's epic.
Stuff you can't imagine today or that I would ever let my kid do.
No.
No, absolutely. I did an episode with a security guy a couple months ago, and I was telling him, he was talking about, you know, predators, especially for kids, and not to get sidetracked here, but I told him, I was stuck inland, so I played Pop Warner football. And so I was playing football. I'm coming back. I had to hitch a ride with one of the parents because my parents were out of town. So one of the kids dad drives me, and he didn't drop me off. He goes, you mind if I drop you off on the corner? I'm like, yeah, no, it's, you know, you're a kid. You're like, yeah, no, that's okay. So he drops me off a half a mile away from my house, but I get dropped off on a busy corner, and I'm carrying a big orange bag. I'm such a priority buoy. Talk about surfing priority buoy, and it's a big heavy bag, and I'm this little kid playing Pop Warner football. And long story short, I hear something trailing behind me, and I look over my shoulder, and I notice this car. It was like the full stereotypical thing. Car looked dark inside, creepy, and I'm like, what the F? And so I pick up my pace, and still following me. I hit another intersection. I'm like, oh, I'll probably turn right, he'll turn left. I'm hanging left so I can get to my house. He follows me, and now he's right behind me. So I'm like, I was like 12 years old. I'm like, F this. And I start booking. I start running with this, and I'm clang, getting hit with the helmet and the shoulder pads and the back of my head with the bag, and I'm carrying all my gear, and I'm running, and the car speeds up. And I'm like, oh, it's on now. So Mick, this is probably where I became the HP in my life. At that age in my life, I said, F you. I'm not going to be a victim. F this. I start running, and this is when my parents lived on 2 acres, and I get to the border perimeter fence. I huck the bag over the fence. I climb over the fence. I turn around, and the car was stopped staring at me. And I ran through the field with my bag and hid behind some trees. And then I looked out and I saw the car circle around, and then it took off. So
wow, that could have been a bad story.
Chance. So as you said, you would never let your daughter and Mick with your son and your older daughter. Yeah, I would. Oh, God, wouldn't either. There's no way.
You know, it's different. Whereas I remember my friends and I, you know, at 11 years old, holding on the back of 18 wheelers in the Vons parking lot in Westchester, California, mm-hmm. getting towed around by the airport,
yeah.
You know, whereas now my son's on an electric Super 73 rolling down the street to, you know, go to get frozen yogurt.
Yeah.
So different.
Absolutely. So, and sorry about my little sermon there. So as you guys are getting older, and so Mick, you're getting into college. And Chance, you're still in high school, but I kind of want to just pair it off so for time wise. So when you guys both get to that college level and you realize, I mean, Mick, you were still competitive surfing, Chance maybe on the side here and there, but you guys kind of had you started realizing, all right, I need to further my education, right? Is that where you guys start thinking, if I got to do something more productive in my life, I got to further my education? Is that where you guys went?
Yeah, let me jump, Chance. As Chance said, same thing happened to me. Is went to San Diego State and was fortunate enough to win the San Diego State Surf Championships. At that time, a lot of the peer group that I surf with in my division were going, they're traveling internationally, doing contests and stuff like that. And like Chance, I just realized that I might be a decent competitor, but my ability is nowhere near guys like, you know, I surfed against Archie and Dino and Eggers and those guys. I mean, they're so good. Mm-hmm. And it was just pretty clear, even though what we grew up in the South Bay with wearing the team jackets and stuff, when you start opening that up to the San Diego County and Orange County and Ventura County, and then you go international like that, there's so many good guys out there. And it just quickly became clear, probably a better route to support a family in the future is to get a degree, find a job somewhere that allows you to continue surfing, but make some money, you know?
And that's great. You found that, because a lot of guys don't, you know, a lot of guys get sidetracked and get sidelined. So
yeah, it was cool. I got to surf Ocean Beach, San Francisco too during graduate school,
which is,
and moved to San Diego for undergrad. That was out of Manhattan Beach. I mean, come on.
Yeah. That's really cool, Mick. I mean, great accomplishments there. And surfing OB up north. That's not OB down south, OB up north. That's heavy.
Yeah.
And some big fish. So Chance.
Yeah.
Okay, so excuse me for my ignorance, but we never got that deep. So did you say you went to college, or did you go straight into like flight type training?
Straight into college. I went to El Camino Junior College at that time. Remember, all the UC schools were all so impacted that even if you got in, you might not get any classes. Junior college, and was going to transfer. And at the same time, right after I graduated high school, I started taking flying lessons. My dad had encouraged me a few times, and I finally tried it and really liked it. So I did that at the same time, and then went to Long Beach City College because they were offering all of the ground instruction for aviation that I was doing anyway. So So I figured I might as well get a degree in that. So I have a 2-year degree in aviation. And then I started teaching, got all of my licenses, and then I taught other people to fly. A big barometer for your resume in flying is how many hours you fly. In order to gain more hours, I would teach other people how to fly so I could get hours and get paid versus paying to fly. And I transferred to Cal State Long Beach and kept going to school, not aviation related, and fly instructing, and then got a job right out of college with a regional airline, which is, I guess you'd call it like the farm system of aviation, and did that for a few years before I came to Southwest.
What you just said in a quick nutshell, that's a lot, man. So good job, bro.
Yeah, I was happy to have, you know, my dad was able to, you know, sort of point me in the right direction and give me some guidance, ways to steepen the learning curve and also the career path. I worked very hard, but I'm also totally aware that many things went my way.
Well, thanks to Dad, stud. Awesome.
Yeah, our grandfather was also a 7-4 captain for United.
Oh.
What chance, like, he retired, what, numbers 3 or 4 in seniority or something like that? Yeah.
Whoa.
So, yeah. And I think Chance made a really good decision compared to the amount of miles he gets to ride every week on his bike.
So due to time, let's segue into that. So you guys are both living successful careers. You have families. You've done a great job. I'm stoked and proud for you guys. Considering how crazy it can be out there, you guys stayed the course and got things accomplished in both of you individually. So Chance, seeing that you're in a suburb of Chicago, I'm sure you every once in a while you might miss the water and the ocean and surfing and the beach and being a pilot. So I'm sure you can get out west or Hawaii or somewhere, right? And catch a few waves once in a while.
Yeah, usually the most common is trips where I'll spend the night in San Diego and Mick and I will go surf together. Or sometimes if I get LA trips, I'll go surf with some of the people I grew up with.
Oh, that's cool.
Mike, the most frustrating thing is Chance will be out of the water for 5 months. He'll come by the house, borrow a wetsuit from me, borrow a board that he's never been. I was out there. He's still got that same Curran style, like just smooth as hell.
Nice.
It's creepy. Yeah.
Oh, so you had a Curran style.
he's very smooth. Everything's in the right place.
Nice. Awesome. And Mick, you were able to stay in Southern California and have a successful career, and you continue to work, and you're, like you said, you just got out of the water a little earlier, right?
Yeah, no, it's throughout the career, whether, you know, grad school was in San Francisco and then came back down here, never stopped surfing, obviously stopped the competitive thing, but then I was fortunate enough to live in Newport Beach for a while, and obviously that's fun because we all love noobs, but then did a lot of work in London, but it was for, you know, usually less than 90 days a year for tax reasons. And being in San Diego, just the variety of waves down here is just unbelievable. And kind of along the lines of your podcast, it's the compass doesn't point north unless you're in the water frequently. For me, you know, my brother has, which you haven't touched upon yet, but my brother's also an Ironman.
That's right. Yeah. And my bad. You need to get in there.
Yeah. So on that whole theory, yeah, Chance is an Ironman. So, but again, getting out in the water, which I'm pretty much a weekend warrior now, but having a standing tee time with the boys in the water, still get a little competitive out there with some of the guys, and you know all the boys are still throwing turns. It still just puts a smile on your face. You know, salty hair, salty face. It has to be part of every week. You know, just it keeps you righted.
Hey, absolutely. I haven't surfed that much in the last couple of years. I've had 3 surgeries and some gnarly stuff go on, and Mick, you know, Jessica, I mean, COVID almost killed her.
Yeah.
So it's been a little rough couple of years over here.
Okay. We'll take that offline because I love Jessica dearly.
Yeah, it's been rough. So, but I'm finally healed up from my knee surgery and I'm itching to get back in the water. I got 2 new boards. And anyways, Chance, I am going to hit you up on that in a sec. Hold on. But I'm so excited to talk to you guys about surfing. So that's awesome, Mick. Good job, bro. So, and that's funny, Chance, you talking about walking to school on Monday with that new shirt, the NSA shirt. It's kind of like Thursdays or Fridays, the football guys would be wearing the jerseys and you guys are wearing these surf t-shirts, you know?
That's such a flex for us, but we were often the only people that knew the significance of it.
Yeah,
that's cool. So Chance, yeah, found something that supplemented, I guess, your competitiveness with surfing is you got into Ironman, bro. That's gnarly. So what kicked that off?
Once I got hired at Southwest, I for my job. You can live wherever you want, but wherever you're based is where you have to start and end your trip. So I didn't want to commute. I wanted to live where I was based. So Chicago being a base and my wife, Lori, her family was here. So we decided to move here and at least try it. So once I moved from four blocks to the beach, growing up, I thought I'd always either live near the beach or in the mountains. And now I don't live by either one. Lake Michigan is good. It's better than nothing, but it was a big shift. So a good friend of mine, Matt Walls, got way into running marathons. So once I moved here, he goes, hey, why don't you try running? So the first few years I was here, I ran a decent amount. So I started doing some marathons. And then a couple years, I did two a year, Chicago, which is always in October. And then a couple years, I did Catalina Island, which is in March. So there's 6 months apart. And I would run with all my friends I grew up with. So after a little while of doing that, that kind of took over my physical need to move my body and, you know, stay active. And I got a little bit bored with that. And then Matt, again, also suggested triathlons. So I started doing that and then wanted to try and see if I could do an Ironman. So I entered, got in, and I did, I think the first one was 2005 or six. There's one nearby us here in Madison, Wisconsin, which is about 3.5 hours away. 5 hours away, my wife's saying, no, six, I can do math. 2006. And I just trained the best I could and went and did it and did as well as I thought I could. And then a few years later, I tried to do it again, which was exciting, but also a little discouraging because the first time you don't know what you're getting into. You're just fired up and you're like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And after the second one, I'm like, oh, man, I know what I'm getting into. I mean, there were summer days where I'd get up at 5 a.m, ride my bike for 6 hours. And then go to the water park with my daughter for 3 hours.
Yes, was the first one. Did you find it easy? I mean, I know it's physically grueling, but...
The hardest part, I think, that people don't talk as much about is the mental part. You're starting at the start line at 7 a.m, and you're going to go 140.6 miles total.
Not unless I'm in a car, buddy. Not unless I'm in a car.
112. You got to break it down into bite-sized pieces.
Mm-hmm.
The first one I did, it was overcast, about 50 degrees, and rained all day. It was rare because triathlon's a summer sport. They had people pulling over to the side with hypothermia because they were cold. But the benefit of that being overcast is you didn't get the passage of time, which was actually a benefit. Till the very end on the run when the lights, street lights came on, then I realized that it was late. I wouldn't say it was easy, but part of it you just don't know. And you have so much built up into it that you want to just, you know, it wasn't a matter of if I was going to finish it, just how long is it going to take?
Right.
And a couple of those, now it's not, because it just takes too much time. It's like having a part-time job.
That's awesome, Chance.
Yeah, so now I stopped doing the Ironman or triathlon stuff because it just takes so much time. You're trying to find time for three sports. So now I'll run when I go to work because it's easy to pack a pair of shoes and I need to get exercise from sitting all day.
And then, it's easy too when you have a layover in the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, I mean, you're just a good moving from sitting all day at work. And now mostly I just ride my bike. I try and ride if I could 2 to 3 days a week if I can.
Nice. Yeah, I see your posts on social media. That's cool. A lot of bike shots, which is cool, and the outdoor stuff. So that's great, you guys. So you're still able to live the outdoor lifestyle to keep the fire. You stoking the fire, keep the flame going. Keep the excitement in your brain going.
You talk about the COVID and then going down, Mike, with your surgeries and the wife. And, you know, I remember that time, everything around us is going horribly. Like it's a scary place that nobody's ever been in. And, you know, back to that point, it was interesting when the beaches in San Diego finally opened up, a couple of us crept out there and then it became the only place. Golf courses were closed. You know, canyons were closed. You couldn't hike in when they opened the beaches. The onslaught of humans in the water, although that was annoying because everybody in the world started surfing, it was church, man. That was like salvation. You know, that was happy times. Not that it's been any different otherwise. It was just extra specially. The spotlight was very bright on that. Looking forward to that Saturday and Sunday because work, you know, on Teams calls all day during the pandemic from 6 a.m. till 8 p.m. when Saturday and Sunday came around, getting into that water, and it was eerie too. You know, other than the people in the water, there's nobody on the beach. There's no cars around. That was salvation-y, if that's a word.
Yeah. Huntington Beach and Newport Beach were like the only spots open in this whole area. All of LA County was shut down. And so every freaking person out there was coming down from LA County and in the Inland Empire.
There was vibes, right?
And
vibes.
Chance, when COVID was around and things were shut down, what was your outlet? Did you have like a bike in the garage? What were you doing, man?
Yes, I have, mostly for winter, I have a thing you can put your bike on. It's called a smart trainer. Mm. So it talks to my computer, and there's a couple of different platforms. I use one of the more, I think it's the most popular one. It's called Zwift, where it's basically like a virtual world. They've taken some of the world famous courses and climbs and built them in a virtual world. So when I'm climbing up a hill, it talks to my trainer and makes it harder. But while I'm doing that, I can look on there and there might be 3,000 people also riding on it from all over the world. So I got to the.
Is that Peloton, pre-Peloton?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Totally. Yeah, and it's cycling specific because you can put your actual bike on it. But yeah, that's pretty much. I got to the point too where I started having to take days off because I was getting so sore because I was riding every day. I need to exercise regularly. I'm a lot nicer to be around if I exercise. Especially at that time, there was so much uncertainty everywhere.
Especially as a pilot. Yeah.
Our industry was, I mean, we were losing tens of million dollars a day. I would go to work, we'd fly an airplane around that holds 175 people, and we'd have two people.
Wow.
Like, not even paying for the fuel, none of us. I mean, it was just, it was creepy. So, I mean, you needed some sort of physical outlet for some of that stress, and yeah, exercise for sure was it.
Chance, was it as creepy as when you were in the air as a junior first officer and 9/11 happened, and you got to overhear the FAA come through your headset?
I think that part we just didn't know what we didn't know. You know, this was similar in the fact that none of us have lived through anything like this. And, you know, stuff just coming, you know, left and right. And, you know, nobody knew what to do. And when you can't travel and all your company does is travel, that's not good.
That's heavy, Chance. So you were you dealt with 9/11 as a pilot, and then you dealt with it with the pandemic. That's wow.
Yeah, he was in the air when it happened. Chance, are you allowed to talk about what you heard over the air?
Well, we were somewhere in the Northeast, Manchester, New Hampshire, somewhere to Baltimore by Washington, D.C. And it was a fall, super clear fall day. As we went by Manhattan, we had a brand new flight attendant. And at the time, that was okay. We had him come up just to show them what it looked like. Because when they were new, they used to be able to come up in the front and, you know, or if we use the laboratory or something, they can come up. So we just said, hey, we want to show you this. Beautiful day, landed in Baltimore, didn't really know what was happening. We started hearing some weird delays and things. Took off from, that was probably about an hour or so before everything happened. And then went from Baltimore to Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina, which is only about a 40-minute flight. And in the air, we would listen to two radios all the time. We listened to air traffic control on one, and on the second one, we would listen to our company. So if they needed to get a hold of us. And we started hearing people talk to our dispatch, which is in Dallas, Texas, saying, hey, air traffic control wants us to land here or there. And these were cities we didn't serve. But nobody would say why.
Mm-hmm.
Like Air Force bases and stuff and random runways?
Cities, you know, basically they wanted everyone to get on the ground. So we were close enough to where we were going that we got on the ground, and that's when we found out what had happened. And I remember the operations agent came onto the airplane and said, we need you to stay on the airplane seat. We might need you to move it because Raleigh-Durham's about the middle of the East Coast, and everybody going north and south, we had a tons of airplane. You know, if you're over north Raleigh-Durham, they're like, just go there. I can still remember sitting there and the guy telling us what happened and us looking, myself looking at the captain and scratching our head and going like, what do you mean? And like, is there a video? Like, can I see it? Like, we were just so like, dumbfounded at what happened.
Well, and didn't you just say though earlier that you showed the flight attendant in the cockpit, you flew by Manhattan or New York City, right?
I think about 45 minutes or an hour before it happened.
Dude, gnarly. Isn't
that crazy?
Yeah, there's a crystal clear day, so you can see Central Park, you can see everything. So we're like, hey,
my gosh. Wow. That's heavy. And so you got forced to land in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Yeah, that's where we were going anyway. So that was a Tuesday.
Okay.
And we were until Friday. And every day you'd get up and it was like Groundhog Day because you'd go to the front desk and they would say, okay, we're going to start flying tomorrow. And they would build a schedule and then they'd come down tomorrow and they're like, nope, we're going to start flying the next day. Because nobody knew, you know, and there are airplanes everywhere and people everywhere. It was chaos.
Yeah, that was bad day, but glad you're all right. God bless everybody else. Wow. We got to all hook up, by the way. It's way overdue.
Definitely.
And Mick, now that I'm getting healthier again, I'm coming down there because San Diego, I miss surfing down there. I mean,
yeah. Well, for all your listeners and stuff, some of the greatest times we ever had is remember when we would roll up to Radars with Jorge and Gracie and Hickson. I think
Who came up there? So people listening, I started my jiu-jitsu career in November 92 with Hoist Gracie. He was my first
before jiu-jitsu. It was cool.
And then the guys way before me, I mean, geez, those guys are the real pioneers. But anyways, I got in pretty early compared to most. And long story short, Hoist Gracie was my first coach because I lived in Manhattan Beach and I would train in Torrance. And Horan was there. Hickson recently left and started doing his own school elsewhere. And they had this family squabble using the Gracie name. It was a whole internal strife thing. But anyways, who went with us up to Radars and drove with us was, oh my God, I'm spacing out on his freaking name. He's in San Diego, bro. He's not a family member. He's just a good friend. Oh my God. You know what, bro? I'm going to hang up on this episode. I'm going to go, oh my God, that's you. I'm going to have to text you. But yeah, he was super, oh my God, it's driving. I got a picture somewhere up in this room here with me and Hoist and, oh, that's killing me. Wow, that's bad. I'm getting old. Anyways, Chance, sorry, we're babbling, but, used to go to Radar Towers. Remember, you should be able to drive on the beach. You could drive on the freaking beach and just back your truck up, unload the boards out of my 4Runner and go surf. Epic.
Yeah.
I mean,
I
miss that.
Yeah. No, so that was epic. I mean, it was fun being in your wedding with Hoist Gracie, and I actually finally got to meet the guy that won UFC 1, 2, and 3. So he and I hanging out at the Jonathan Club was pretty cool. The other one that was cool, whether you edit this out or not, is remember whether your listeners know it or not, Mike's first date with his wife, I was on that date. It was a double date. And remember we were at the bar and you fought those three guys?
Well, that was the that was the second date, because the first date we were at like Sloopy's or something in Manhattan Beach, and like we had dinner there, and then we walked out and it was Jen, Jessica, you and me, and then I forechecked you into that pile of trash bags. Oh my God.
Thanks. I miss you.
Oh, that was epic. I don't know what got over me, but I just thought I'd forecheck you that day. And God, I love you, Mick.
I'll never forget you on the sidewalk with a guy in a backwards headlock, the other guy in a leg lock, and you spinning around going, Mick, keep that guy off of me.
That was the second date. And I thought that would be my last date with my wife, because that was a heavy night.
Please tell Jessica I said hello and love her to death. She is freaking awesome at what she does.
Yeah, Chance, you would dig Jessica. Chance, she got her PsyD degree, doctorate degree, and she works with autistic children, has an office, well, three offices, 150 plus employees. She's the padrona of that. Anyway, super smart, just like you guys. Chance, Mick, excellent. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate you making the time. And ladies, thank you for loaning your men out for the night so I can rap with them. And you guys have a great rest of the week. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Mike.
All right.
Thanks, Mike. Keep it up, bud.
See you guys. Later.
Thank you for listening to Postel's podcast. We hope you gained new insights on managing life through knowledge about real estate, your personal safety, and living the outdoor lifestyle. Join us next time, so please like and subscribe to the Postel's podcast. Stay safe and power up.